As we move forward, I think these are all topics worthy of discussion.
Topics worthy of discussion.
All right, let's get into topics worthy of discussion. It's our panel every weekday afternoon at this time. And yet with us again is Alyssa Freeman, a public relations strategist and PR and pop culture media expert. Good afternoon to you, Alyssa.
Good afternoon, John.
Kevin Goodet is a principal with Brightpoint Strategy and former head of external relations for the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Hello, Kev.
Hey, Johnny.
And Rocco Rossi, the CEO of Prostate Cancer Canada, soon to be the CEO of the Ontario Chamber of Commerce. How's Rocco?
Never better on a great day for talk radio.
Sure is. You know, I mean, we take such for granted, but I mean, against the backdrop of what happened in Vegas on Sunday night, you know, a lot of people just start to wonder about how, as they say in baseball parlance, we're all listed day to day, if you really think about it. And Edmonton, yes, you're right. You know, and it's funny because it's been eclipsed by, obviously, the Vegas carnage. And I'm not even being facetious when I say one of the luckiest people around is O.J. Simpson. He got let out of jail and nobody
right
cares.
Under right, right under the radar. Right under the radar.
Isn't it true? He goes to Mickey D's. That's his first thing. Get a Big Mac and pretty much kind of
slips right back into society.
Well, he does. Remember the whole story around Chappaquiddick was at the bottom of the page because of man landing on the moon.
That's
and
right.
So the Ted Kennedy got a bit of a pass in terms of the news cycle.
It's funny, eh? Because when these things happen of such a magnitude, something else like O.J. Simpson's name is in very small type, and it would have been the predominant story. But that being said, this story continues to predominate. Nobody knows the reason behind it, if we can even ascribe reason to this. It's just the evil act of a madman. I mean, this is what Donald Trump couched it as, evil, and some people think that's a colloquialism. Others believe there's actually evil that exists in our universe, in the cosmos. I mean, Rocco, do you believe there is such a thing?
Yes, I do.
And this was evil incarnate.
This is clearly someone who is beyond reason. You know, I think I understand in the media world that you know, you want to get the story out and so on. But I also find really quite offensive the wall-to-wall continually playing the sound of the gunfire. And I just think it's also beyond the bounds of good taste and the need to know. I think we need to focus on the families and the people who have been, you know, brutally had their lives taken from them by what is clearly evil, what is clearly beyond reason.
You raise a great point, though. The disconnect we have for maybe the empathy towards the people who were victimized in this, not dissimilar to 9/11. You know, there were some broadcast outlets that would not show the planes going into the building or buildings, even though I guess we all understood after we saw it one time or two or five or 10 times, it was like, okay, enough already. There are real live people on those planes in that last moment of horror before they met an untimely end. Alyssa, you feel the same way as Rocco does? I mean that the, you know, every story that covers this, and I don't excuse ourselves either. I mean, you know, it's just all over the news. It's almost like we've become desensitized or inured to it, or we think it's a part of the story and you just kind of play it without really processing the information that Rock was brought to mind. Do you think there's something obscene about doing that?
Yeah, I do. And I think that, you know, we have discussed this with different stories about when has the media crossed that threshold? And I think that they've set a new bar for us by saying, okay, you know, I was listening to Trevor Noah last night, and he said, you know, this is the way the narrative goes. Mass shooting, mass shooting, mass shooting, mass shooting. Oh, we better, like, be more secure about hotel check-ins. It's almost like we have to grasp on something as to why this happens. And it's true. Every time I turn on the news, I hear the rat-a-tat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat. And I'm thinking, is there a new bar that's been set? And if so, we can't go back. That's the issue. And the other issue that kind of segues into is, you know, Tom Petty, you know, unfortunately passed away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the difference in the way that story played out to the way that the Vegas shooting played out is two very different ways. I'm finding that the reporting is, for lack of details, much more measured with the Vegas shooter because there isn't anything that they can grasp onto to make something out of. Whereas with the Petty story, he was dead. then he wasn't dead, and then he was on life support, and then the family took him off life support. And, you know, right up until the very, very last minute, like at midnight, nobody really knew where that story was. So there was a lot of conjecture. That's where I kind of see the difference. And TMZ actually played that 911 call.
Right, we have it. I'm going to play it here in a moment. I just wanted to get Kevin in here with your reaction to what we've discussed about, you know, the rat-a-tat-tat incessant in every news clip about this story. Has it crossed the line of maybe showing an insensitivity that shouldn't be shown?
Well, the old adage was, if it bleeds, it leads. Right. I'm not sure that that's changed, except that our news cycles have changed. So instead of a daily, arguably twice a day newspaper on which the front page might have the bleed, if it bleeds, it leads, now we've got 24-hour news cycles, which change by the minute, if you will. And in that context, I'm not sure it actually really is any different. It's just, it's more frequent. And in this instance, I actually happen to think that it is actually part of the news story. Now, I know I, as a consumer of that product, choose not to go and seek it repeatedly. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to see it. I'm looking in the news now to see whether or not there's more information about what they found out. Was there more than one person involved? Was it really a lone wolf? Mm-hmm. There's different videos. There's different audio of potentially multiple guns, multiple people involved. I'm looking for that information. I'm not personally interested in the sensationalized rat-a-tat-tat.
But in the absence of information, honestly, that's why you keep hearing the rat-a-tat-tat. Because there is, it's true, because there is nothing. So if it bleeds, it leads. How do we keep the story going? Because now this has been 24 hours. And typically, even with the most horrible world disaster, you've got about 4 days in the news cycle before it gets pushed off by something else or just by news fatigue. So by keeping up that rat-a-tat-tat, that verbal assault, it keeps us engaged. Into, I want to find out more. Is there any more information? And honestly, like, I hate to be jaded about that, but that is what I feel is going on.
It's news porn.
Is that what it is? It's gratuitous sensationalization?
Yeah. Period, full stop.
News porn. The other thing, of course, is the question of whether or not this fits the definition of domestic terrorism. I mean, I don't know how we parse those terms. There actually are legal standards and in Nevada, I guess you might call it that, according to their criteria, in U.S. federal law, a violent act meets the definition of domestic terrorism if the actor was seeking to intimidate or coerce a civilian population, to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion, to affect the conduct of a government by mass destruction, assassination, or kidnapping. It doesn't seem to satisfy any of those requirements, but so do you think, Kevin, that this is domestic terrorism?
Well, 2 points. First of all, no. Absent any information about the motive of the shooter or shooters at this point in time, I don't know how anybody can say it's terrorism. And then the second point I wanted to get to is I do worry that we're awfully quick, some are too quick to toss that word around. And when every large shooting or every horrible incident is deemed terrorism, then it means that nothing is terrorism. It can't all be terrorism. And in this case in particular, we don't yet know the motives. And until we do, I don't see how we can use that term.
It's almost a way of couching things that have to do with gun control, because nobody wants to talk about gun control. So they call it domestic terrorism, or they say that this is
about gun control now. What do you mean nobody's talking? They're talking about now.
I'm saying from a political point of view.
Whoa, hang on.
And I think on the politics side, the only piece clearly on the terrorism piece, it doesn't meet the legal test. But I think the emphasis is on the domestic so that people aren't freaking out. This is an Islamic attack on people. They've gone to the Sodom and Gomorrah of North America and Las Vegas and that this is domestic in the sense that it seems clear. We don't have all of the detail, but this is not some Middle Eastern terrorist group.
ISIS has claimed responsibility, and
ISIS claims responsibility for everything.
Hurricane.
Yeah.
Great. So, unless and until the national security authorities say that it wasn't, I'd like to hear them rule it out before we start unilaterally ruling it out ourselves. Do I agree that probabilistically it's not likely? I agree with you. Right. But I'd like to hear them tell me that first.
All right, so you're not discounting it. Just for what it's worth, you know, in Nevada, they actually have a law that defines terrorism as, quote, any act that involves the use or attempted use of sabotage, coercion, or violence, which is intended to cause great bodily harm or death to the general population, which means in Nevada, they would classify this as domestic terrorism. Federally, not so much. So there you go on the matter of definition. Now, you had brought up, Alyssa, the Tom Petty 911 tape, TMZ, the site that traffics in gossip and all kinds of other salacious details and personal lives and what have you. They got a hold of it. I'm going to play it for you. Just take this under advisement, and we'll see if this was appropriate, because they're getting blowback as well for lacking decorum and all the other wonderful things. And so I'm kind of falling into that trap, because I'm going to play it for you here in just a moment with our panel, Alyssa Freeman, Rocco Rossi, and Kevin Gaudette. It's The Oakley Show, Talk Radio, AM 640. Let's get right back into it. Topics worthy of discussion with our panel today, Alyssa Freeman, Kevin Gaudette, Rocco Rossi. And Alyssa, you did bring up the fact that, you know, Tom Petty passing at 66 late Sunday. We had talked about it on Monday, and I mean, it was kind of a weird one because, in fact, LAPD initially had reported that he had died, and then they recanted, and then, of course, it was inevitable, I felt, but, you know, it was like in the news business, the adage, get it first, but first get it right, and it didn't seem to apply with the LAPD. Nonetheless, there was this audio tape of the 911 call that his wife had placed, and TMZ got a hold of it, and they've been dining out on it, I guess, because it's front and center. It's big news. It's right in their wheelhouse. And under advisement, this is how that sounded.
Isn't breathing. Like,
how old is he?
He's 67.
Okay, and so he's not breathing at all?
No.
Oh, hi. Is he on the ground?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any vomit in his mouth?
No.
Okay. What I need you to do is I need you to kneel next to his chest, okay?
Kneel next to his chest.
If someone with me, and I can't reach you. Okay, can I talk to them, please?
Okay, thanks. So I kneel next to his chest.
Okay, I need you to place one hand on the bone in the center of his chest, just right between his nipples, okay? Can I talk to the person that's doing the CPR so I can just give them the directions directly?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's very uncomfortable. Rocco, I mean, in the last installment, you were talking about crime porn and what. Does this cross a line of, well, being insensitive, inappropriate?
Look, it's not something I would want to listen to. That said, as someone who was formerly CEO of the Heart and Stroke Foundation and knowing the importance of CPR and how people justifiably freak out when a family member collapses in front of them, that being trained in this, particularly if you've got someone in your family who has heart problems, is an important lesson for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So if it does that, and I don't think that's TMZ's motive, to be clear,
right.
But if it were to do that, I think the 911, the one thing that's truly remarkable when I heard it was the calm and professionalism of the operator trying to take the person through, because for them it's not necessarily Tom Petty, it's just someone.
All right, but you know, just playing something as intimate as the death throes of a celebrity. Kevin, is there an issue here, or you know, does the public, you know, curiosity have to be satisfied, or is it something that's really important to the overall story? I mean, what's your take?
Well, I'm one of these guys who likes privacy and would like to respect others' privacy. I'm not clear how they would have obtained this. I would think it would have had to have been leaked by somebody in the force.
Sure, they pay for it.
Well, and as such, I would think that must be a violation of a contract and hopefully a firing offense. I'm trying to imagine. I know Tom Petty's famous, and people in my family aren't. But when we had a family emergency, I thank God they aren't peddling those or anybody's horrible experiences like that. So
it's private.
And I just think it's poor, but it's the bleed it leads stuff. I just think it's poor taste on behalf of the media to put that stuff in the public domain.
Well, and the folks at TMZ understand their audience, or you know how they can monetize this stuff. Anything wrong with it, Alyssa?
Well, according to their business model, that's what they're supposed to do. And I think that what media outlets are doing now are testing the boundaries versus sort of going back to their ethics and going, you know, should we be doing this in the right, you know, in the first place? But, you know, honestly, you know, when you put these things out, you are testing the boundaries of audience acceptance and how far can we push this? And sometimes the only way, I'm not saying this is right, but sometimes the only way to do that is to put it out and to suffer the blowback or lack of blowback. So I think that this is a testing of boundaries for us as consumers of this news. And I'm happy to say that what I've read is that people are upset with, you know, the reporting of this and the playing of this. This woman, like, it is hard to really listen to this woman who is in distress, despite the fact that, you know, the person is going through CPR, which can be a life lesson. But honestly, for me, it was a line that was crossed.
So everybody agrees this was a line that was crossed.
And this is back to what Kevin was saying earlier about the 24-hour news cycle. In the days of twice-a-day newspaper, there would have actually been meetings of editorial staff. Do we do this? What does the lawyer say? What's the ethics in this? When you're 24/7, you're competing against a gazillion news outlets or information outlets or info porn outlets. You want to be there first, not necessarily right, but be there first with the most. And that leads to a lot of dreck like this getting onto
the
air.
In a competitive news environment, anything that, you know, appeals to the prurient interest is obviously going to capture eyes, ears, whatever the medium, right? Clickbait.
We're talking about them, making them relevant.
Well, here's the thing. Before, it was like, let's discuss this and make sure this is the right thing to put out. Now it's, let's put it out, and if something's wrong, we'll correct it on the fly. Yeah. And that seems to be the way things go now. So the first thing you do is you get it out on Twitter and see how that flies while you're writing the story. So you use one platform to make it look like breaking news like you had at first. Meanwhile, some guys in there, some women's in the newsroom typing it out. Now, if there are details to be changed, you can at least start to change them on social media, but you don't call it mistake, you call it update.
Well, there are no private spaces anymore. Everything is, you know, accessible to the public. I mean, remember the time John Lennon was shot and somebody actually close to the body or a morgue worker had taken back the sheet and a picture of him, and I can't remember at the time, but sold that to whether it was the Inquirer or one of those tabloids and made mucho dinero for doing it. I mean, it was something.
And now with mobile phones, with the technology that we have today, everyone is a walking, talking media outlet.
Citizen journalism.
Well, yeah, but I don't know if it classifies as journalism, but you can monetize it, and if you can profit from it or in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, the definition of journalism has expanded to places where we might not like where it's gone.
Or lowered.
Right. All right, well, that's why they're getting blowback there at TMZ. I want to cue the outrage when we come back again, because there are some things happening here in our midst at the U of T. Toronto concert venues, reasons to be outraged or not. We'll find out how you feel about that in moments here on The Oakley Show. Back with our panel now, Alyssa Freeman, Kevin Gaudet, and Rocco Rossi. I've got to ask you about something else that I guess will have the full weight of the law or a bylaw behind it if it's if it passes as a motion before City Council, because the council wrote in Ward 42, acting at the behest, I guess, of a constituent, wants to know which symbols can be displayed during events in city parks and other public spaces. Apparently, a woman went to the Highland Creek Festival last summer, and there was a replica of the General Lee from the Dukes of Hazzard, and it's got, as you may know, the Confederate flag on the top as well as on the bumper, and she believes that this was so odious it represents lynching and death of black people. It's racist. It doesn't belong here. So this motion is going before City Council. Now, James Pasternak, another councillor, was on yesterday. He wants to propose some kind of city debate or discussion as to which city-owned spaces should not allow for toxic messages from white supremacists, his words. I'm just wondering, is this something that we can condone collectively? Like, we make our minds up, certain symbols shouldn't be permissible, certain speech shouldn't be permissible, or is that getting onto a slippery slope, Rocco?
I'm very much someone who is biased towards the defense of free speech, because I believe that once you start drawing those distinctions, it is a very slippery slope down to abuse of free speech. And that doesn't mean that there isn't odious stuff out there, but it's you know, it's Voltaire once again. It's I disagree with what you say, but I defend to the death your right to say it. That it is absolutely critical in a democracy and to have it. And yes, we've got to draw lines around hate, around when people are inciting people to violence.
So that's the distinction there. Once they cross that line.
That I think the incitement to violence and hate speech, that is where that line is crossed.
How about it, Kevin? I mean, is there a point where the city needs to regulate this under municipal bylaws? Who's permissible, who's not? Don't give permits to certain groups meeting, or, you know, if you've got a certain flag that's flying, that's got to be taken down.
No way. It's so arbitrary as to which member of the Soviet gets to decide what language is offensive or not, what symbols are offensive or not. One day, you know, I guess Hezbollah will be allowed, but the Confederate flag won't be. Why can't we just have conversations about ideas, and some will prevail and some will not, and we will be faced with things, ideas, speech, which we don't like, which might even be offensive. But if it doesn't incite hatred or incite crimes, let it go. And how about we strengthen our backs a little bit? Otherwise, it's pretty arbitrary, and it sure immediately raises the obvious specter of thought police.
All right. So and I asked Pasternak about this yesterday. I mean, he talked about white supremacists. What about the El Quds Day rally, you know, where there's a lot of Israel bashing there? Alyssa, I mean, should that be allowed to take place, or do you think there's got to be some preemptive bylaw in place that says, no, you guys can't even get a permit?
You know, what worries me are the people who would be making these decisions, and this is something that you just alluded to, Kevin. You know, who are the thought police here, and is it because that they don't like certain groups, so therefore they can't say what they want? You know, I am very much against most of this, white supremacists and Al-Quds, to be quite honest, but you know, unless they're absolutely inciting hate, and also the people who are, you know, bringing these toward forward as motions, you know, I can't help but think that it's just sort of, I hate to say this, it's almost like convenient clickbait. Like, it's a great way to position yourself as caring for your constituency, and I want to do the right thing, so therefore I think that we should decide X. And honestly, I don't know whether these people have the capability of making those decisions.
I mean, we have trained judges. We've got a legal system around this. This isn't a bylaw issue.
This isn't municipal. I mean, honestly.
And we're talking about the Dukes of Hazzard car.
I know.
So there's an awful lot of people who, A, won't even notice the Confederate flag, B, won't know what the hell it is or what it represents.
It doesn't mean anything Scarborough. I mean,
all these people
on.
And all these kids who are just going to go and see it because they think the car is cool.
Well, they say the stars and the bars somehow is such a weighted symbol. It's so offensive from its historic past.
They can say a lot of stupid stuff.
You know, I mean, honestly, this is something that we're all talking about, so why not use it as one's platform in order to further, you know, one's appearance in the media or to your constituents? Like, honestly, I stand by my remarks. I think this is just clickbait.
All right. And Roger Waters in town for three concerts as of last night, tonight, and again tomorrow. I mean, B'nai B'rith Canada and a group called Stand With Us Canada say he is an anti-Semite. Alyssa, you agree or disagree?
Well, yes, I do agree. And he's got a long history of saying anti-Semitic things. But be that as it may, I don't like Roger Waters. I'm not going to fork over my money, and I don't want to hear his music. But, and on the other hand, you've got Stand Up Canada and B'nai B'rith who are peacefully putting out their thoughts too. So, you know,
so they're not banning the concerts. All they're saying is let the public decide based on information. And if nobody shows up to the shows, be that as it may,
even better.
That's the way it should work.
Let them spew to an empty room.
I got you all. You're all on the same page today for the most part. I appreciate it nonetheless. Alyssa Freeman, Kevin Gaudet, Rocco Rossi. We'll do it again next time.
Topics worthy of discussion.